Hey, Merrick, I think there's a little bit of interference on your line. I keep on hearing awesome double guitar solos.
It's the best, man. I'm just watching Lynyrd Skynyrd Freebird live at Nebworth, 1976. You know what? Hang on, let me turn this down. You know why the 70s was great for rock music, for any music at that matter? Because it was all about volume, but not like, hey, turn it up to 11, Spinal Tap style. It was all about, like, mass quantity of instruments. It's almost like the great bands had to have not one but two drummers, because two drummers made you, well, better because you had another drummer. And then when you get a guitar solo like Freebird, it's almost like you can imagine the studio session where they're laying it down, and the one guy's soloing, and there's another guy with a guitar there because you have to have a million guitars in the studio. And you turn to the producer and you say, oh, what should I play? And he's like, I don't know, just play what he's playing. So you get two people playing the exact same thing. It's big, dumb, effing rock. That's what I love about the 70s, and maybe Freebird's the best example of it. I don't know. Play what he's playing.
Okay.
See, I thought you were going to tell me that the best thing about rock in the 70s was the CD quality of AM radio.
I did grow up on that. I remember, like, rock was supreme on AM radio. That was the day, driving around the parents' old 1976 Buick Riviera, that big old boat.
Oh, man.
With an 8-track, homie. With an 8-track, homie.
There he goes.
Kiss Alive 2. Every Picture Tells a Story, Rod Stewart. Yeah, Live at the Paramount, Guess Who. Those are all my 8-tracks.
Hey, so I have had the opportunity, sir, as you know, in this job to do a great many wonderful things. An unexpected journey, as they say in the tagline for The Hobbit, also applies to my very career. Going to Russia, interviewing Wayne Gretzky, being able to attend the premiere of Mike Myers' classic comedy, The Love Guru. These things in one career. But today, Jeff Merrick, I did something that I have never done before as a professional journalist, sir.
I'd like to pretend that I'm sort of inquisitive about this and I don't know what you're about to say. But I've already retweeted what you're about to do. Yeah, because I retweeted it and we talked about it before. And I think it's maybe the singular greatest thing you have ever done. Kind of like how I always say to myself, no matter what I do in hockey, I will perhaps forever be remembered as a guy that buried a former owner of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think the LA Kings mascot may just be your Harold Ballard. Greg Wyshynski may just be your Harold Ballard.
I was propositioned by a plushie, not the first time, and asked if I wanted to make a wager on the San Jose Sharks and the LA Kings opening round divisional semifinal playoff series beginning tonight by Bailey, the LA Kings mascot, over Twitter. Now, as you know, I am a staunch supporter of the San Jose Sharks and their quest for their first Stanley Cup in franchise history. I believe it'll happen. They are my preseason pick. They are my postseason pick, and I have them winning in 7 games over the LA Kings. This did not sit well with Bailey. Bailey the Lion. The plushy lion.
Yeah.
So, what we decided to do is put a little wager on the series, okay? And here is the wager that we have decided to make.
All right.
The wager for me and Bailey, the plushy lion, is the loser of the series, our respective teams, his the Kings, mine the Sharks, will wear the jersey of the winning team, or really the jersey of the winner's choosing. I mean, I did have somebody on Twitter say that it would be more befitting if I wore a Devil's jersey for this exercise than a Kings jersey, although I own both.
Yeah.
So whatever jersey Bailey wants me to wear, he obviously has a jersey stitched onto his body already, so I can't really make him wear anything else. The loser will wear that winner's jersey and take a pie to the face. And that is the wager that he and I made.
A couple of questions. One we'll get to later, and that is this. When did you start pronouncing Stanley Cup properly? And secondly, who gets to deliver said pie in the face? Because here's what I'd like to put forth. We very seldom, other than our little tweet-ups that we do every now and then, we really get a chance to really do anything for anybody on this podcast. And you know me, Wish. I'm always trying to do things for people, pay it forward, that whole nonsense. Would it be possible to get an MVSW listener to deliver said pie in said mascot's face should you be victorious?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, we're going to need help. I mean, Bailey is located on a different coast than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I imagine we could enlist some help in delivering the pie to either his face or my face. And frankly, I think there'd be a longer line of people taking numbers to put a pie in my face than there would be Bailey's face.
Hey, dude, guess who just texted me? Speaking of which.
Who's that?
Larry Brooks. Anyway, continue.
Jesus. When did they start calling? When did they start calling bullets pies?
Yeah,
that's a weird thing. I'm gonna load up this gun with pies. That's weird. Anyways, so yeah, that'll be the bet. Is the winner the loser takes a pie to the face? I have long wanted to be involved in a pie fight ever since. This is gonna be a dated reference for many people, but many people will go, "Oh yeah, I get that."
I started the show off with Freebird. Okay, don't worry about it.
Well, we're going back to the 70s on this one too. Ever since that episode of the Brady Bunch when they introduced Cousin Oliver, the Poochie of the Brady Bunch. And they had actually had a pie fight that episode. There was a pie fight on the Brady Bunch when Oliver showed up. And I always, since I was a kid, said I would love to participate in a pie fight. Now, when I talk about a pie, there are two different things. There's the stunt pie that you usually see on TV or in movies that's merely just whipped cream or shaving cream, put in a tin and thrown in someone's face.
That's what you do in baseball with the rookie interviews, right? Pie in the face.
Sure. So I that's fine if that's the direction Bailey wants to go, but I think that the people demand something a little bit more realistic. I mean, we are talking about 2014. We can all see the strings in the puppets. We want to know that someone is actually taking a full pie to the face. So I'm willing to take like a lemon meringue pie to my face if the Sharks somehow are upset in this series by the inferior Los Angeles Kings.
That's still a pretty soft pie to take to the face. Like, don't you want to take a?
What are you proposing?
I mean, take like a lemon meringue pie. Like that barely tickles. Why don't you take something that can defend? Take a pie to the face. It's a little bit drippy, but I mean, it's not exactly. It's a pie that can't defend itself. Get a pie that can defend itself. Get like a good like strawberry rhubarb. Take that to the face. Whipped cream pie.
Listen, this is your. Evidently, Jeff Merrick, pie sadist. Why don't we just make it a British meat pie? A boiling hot meat pie. Ooh, that would scald my skin.
A boiling hot chicken pot pie to the face? Nah, that's getting a little bit ridiculous.
Shepherd's pie.
We do need the nut, no, because you just eat it. You'd be like, yeah, if we just open up wide. No, you know, we do need the nut. We do need like a whipped pie. So you do need something like
that. Well, yeah, so a sloppy pie, right. Like a sweet potato pie or something like that. Otherwise, like, we can go like bourbon walnut and break my nose. Like, that'd be fine too.
Pecan
That'd
pie
be Larry
might get
Brooks
that,
pie
yeah.
in this situation.
Yeah, pecan pie might get the job done too.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my new excitement. So now I have awesome. So much on the line when this series begins tonight. You know, not only picking the San Jose Sharks to win the cup and needing them to get past the Kings, but now I actually have something on the line, wager.
Man.
I'll fully admit I did not check the rules and regulations of my job description to know if I can actually make a wager with a mascot as a stunt.
I think considering the vibe you put down on Buck Daddy, I'm pretty sure McAllister is going to be cool with that. Jen Neal has already offered her services as West Coast Pie Thrower. So you already have Jen Neal signed aboard.
There you go.
You already have someone in house, Wish.
That's good to know. Good to know. All right. So there's the excitement for me. When we get back from the intro, we'll talk about last night's action and go forth from there. Coming up on the show today, Drew Remenda, the great Drew Remenda, one of our favorites to talk about. Pretty much to talk about why the Sharks will win the series. I'm sure it begins and ends with that unstoppable brick wall, aka Antti Niemi getting the start tonight. And we will go from there. But with that, we'll start the show proper, shall we?
Shall we? Bow, bow. That's for Sunday.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
When are we going to get our first pro weed player in the NHL?
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I am surprised that we have not seen a goaltender somehow sneak a pot leaf under their mask.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
That would be, that of course would be, for 420, right? Was why we did the intro for that?
Yeah, that's Sunday, so we're not doing a show tomorrow. So, and we're not doing a show, obviously, on Sunday. That was Maddie's idea to blast that one off today. Just
Jeff
as a
Peppers
reminder, 420 days coming up.
Have Jeff Peppers writes in, have Will Wheaton deliver the pie and YouTube it, Celebrity Pie. But that's, I mean, Will's a Kings fan, though. I don't think he'd want to hit Bailey with a pie. I think he'd be sad if the Sharks won. What I need is a celebrity Sharks fan to who is based in the L.A. area to hit Bailey with a pie.
I got it. Neil Young. The season ticket holder for the San Jose Sharks. What's he got to do these days other than complain about the pipeline? He's got to have some time on his hands. You know what? Call Strombo. Let's call Strombo. I talked to Strombo last night. He is in New Mexico. He's driving across the states as we speak. He had to call me up to bitch about a certain play-by-play crew who was calling his Montreal Canadiens game that wasn't his Montreal Canadiens. So I talked to him about half an hour. But let's get in touch with Strombo and see if we can get Neil Young to deliver the pie. I'm sure he could.
Wow.
Yeah, love that publicity.
Eliza Eaton writes in, oh my God, Wyshynski and Jeff Merrick, that's a horrible waste of a damn fine pie.
That's true.
I think they'll make more. Mark Stern, my fiance makes a killer lemon meringue pie. I'd be happy to ship you one when you lose. So now we have people that are not only offering up pies, they're willing to send pies to us and also volunteer to throw pies in our faces. So this is
very exciting. You know, Jen Neal brings up a good point as well, because she's a Ducks fan. So Ducks fan pie thrower is the ultimate insult. That is true.
Indeed.
Neil, you know what? The Neal option's looking better and better.
Yeah, that's true.
I might be Team Neal on this one. Although, you know what?
We should find a Ducks fan would be a neutral arbitrator of pie tossing in this situation.
Dude, you know who the right one is going to be?
Who?
Who's the coolest Ducks fan of all time?
I don't know. Who is it?
For shizzle.
Oh, you want to have Snoop throw the pie?
Yeah.
You want a man with perpetual munchies to have a pie in his hands?
It'll just be half a pie by the time it gets to the mascot, by the time it gets to Bailey. Good point.
Hey, Snoop, what happened to the pie? I think it was stolen, dog. Sorry, that was way too Matthew McConaughey to be Snoop Dogg. Last night in the Stanley Cup playoffs, we had the three really kind of exciting games. One that started out like dog shit, but then became exciting. Let's start with that one. The Anaheim Ducks hang up. Yes, sir.
The intro didn't play over the air. I'm getting a bunch of tweets saying the intro just a long awkward.
Oh, good, because I didn't hear it, and I thought that maybe my line was screwed up. Do you want to play it again?
I don't know. Why don't I play it at the end of the show?
All right, that sounds good. Okay, so nobody heard the intro. It was the 420 intro. It was the Lebowski intro, and we will play at the end of the show. Last night, so the Ducks get out to the 4-spot lead, and then the Stars come rolling back with the goals by Sagan, by Ben, and they hold on at the end. It was very much sort of just a feeling of holding on at the end for the Anaheim Ducks, I felt. And it's one of those losses on the road in a game one for a young team that you can kind of feel okay about, I think, if you're the Dallas Stars.
Didn't you feel, though, the first two periods, and more so really the first period, everybody on the Dallas Stars team was nervous, starting with Kari Lehtinen. Like, I'm sorry, you see how spread out he got on that first goal? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that did not look like Kari Lehtinen, the guy that we've seen play all season long. That looked like the Atlanta Thrasher goaltender we saw only play two games against the Rangers before they bowed out. That was the Lehtinen we saw. And, you know, by the third period, everyone had sort of calmed down, but man, the narrative was quickly becoming, is this Dallas Stars team just too small to handle the big forwards of the Anaheim Ducks? That's what it looked like early, and Anaheim was just going to rock and roll all over these guys until they finally realized, oh yeah, the game started. And then it became the Dallas Stars we've seen all season long.
Indeed, indeed. I think the takeaway though is that they can correct their start. I think that's a correctable thing for a hockey team to, you know, get over the jitters and play well, so that's a good sign. And if you're the Ducks, I think you have to be happy that, you know, although Getzlaff hit the board with a golden assist, you did have Perreault play pretty well. You had some good offense throughout the lineup, I thought, in that game, and Anderson making his first playoff start wasn't horrible. Wasn't great, wasn't horrible, but was good enough where you can come back with him in game two and still feel good about life. And again, I think Bruce is doing the right thing by having the kid go first and have Hiller as the backup. Because, I mean, say what you will about Jonas Hiller and say what you will about him being supplanted as the starter on this team, there still is the fact that we've seen this guy play extraordinarily well in the postseason before, and I think that having that in your hip pocket's a good thing.
But don't you think, isn't there a part of your brain that says, if the Anaheim Ducks have a long run, and hey, maybe the Anaheim Ducks go to the Stanley Cup final. If they do that, it's going to be John Gibson in net. Don't you kind of have that feeling about this year? That this is kind of, I don't know, Patrick Roy 86 a little bit?
There's actually two teams that are like that. By the way, can you drop out and call back in? You're getting robot-y.
Am I getting robot-y again? Okay, let me drop out and call back in.
Okay,
Stand by.
There are two teams that are kind of like that in a way, and they're both in the Western Conference. Like Merrick says, can you picture Gibson being the guy that does the heavy lifting and leads them there? Well, maybe. It's possible. But they already have the rookie starting. So I have a feel. I mean, you've got to go down the ladder a little bit. You've got to have two disasters in order to get to Gibson. And that's really the issue.
How's this?
Anderson's got, I don't know. We'll find out. Anderson's got to shit the bed, and then Hiller's got to shit the bed before you get to Anderson. I mean, before you get to Gibson. The other team, though, that I kind of had a sneaking suspicion could be the team that we see Cam Ward it, if you will, to the Cup final.
Oh.
Might, in fact, be my Cup pick. Couldn't you see a situation where Niemi falters, they turn to Stalak, and he takes them on a run?
It is interesting, too. We'll talk to Drew Remenda about this in a couple of seconds, but you could make the argument that for the first time in his career as a professional, Antti Niemi was pushed this year by the play of Alex Stalak.
Yeah.
And I think the first half of the season, that really made Antti Niemi a better goaltender. Stumbled down the stretch, but I think the presence of Alex Stalak actually helped Antti Niemi this year. And you know what? Maybe it ends up being, I mean, obviously Thomas Greiss did not push Antti Niemi in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
But Stalak's a different guy, and he really did push Niemi this year.
No, we shall see. So that's the Duckies game. You had, of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Montreal Canadiens. The first game that that was started last night was the one that went to overtime, of course, and it was a fun game. I mean, like, we always talk a lot about the playoffs and hatred and how you grow hate and rivalries and feuds. That was a game that was a picture perfect example of how quickly you can develop animosity in a series, because it didn't start off all that rough, and then it got rougher, and then it got rougher, and now all of a sudden we got scrums where Markov hits Palat late, and then here comes Stamkos and he's rushing in to get into the scrum. It was a real fun textbook example of how you can quickly develop hate for the other team. But I think also it helps when you have kind of X factors or new wrinkles thrown in. And Cedric Paquette was that wrinkle. Okay, so this kid comes in. He plays two games in the National Hockey League for the Lightning. He's playing his first NHL playoff game, and he starts throwing around his body and goading Danny Briere and doing all of these chaotic things, which, of course, then eventually led to the game ending because he overplayed his hand trying to chase the puck behind the Lightning net and left Dale Weiss, his man, all alone in front for a point-blank shot against Anders Lindback, who had no chance on the play. So it's one of those wonderful little subplots in the playoffs. Here is Paquette doing a great job getting under the skin of Danny Briere throughout the game. And what does he do? He then allows Danny Briere to make the definitive play in the game, and Weiss ends it in overtime.
Here's why I found that last play. By the way, am I pixelated? My robot?
No, you're fine now.
I'm okay now?
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So here's why I found that overtime game winner so fascinating. It involved two players that probably should not have been on the ice. What is Paquette doing on there? He's in 11 minutes. No one had less ice in that entire game other than Paquette. And what the hell is Dale Weiss doing on the ice in overtime? Like, ask yourself this question. If he's still playing for the Vancouver Canucks, and they're in game one of the playoffs, and they're in overtime, is Dale Weiss on the ice? The answer you're looking for is no. Our guest is standing by, Wish.
Just to finish that thought, by the way, Cooper had problems throughout the game with ice time because Stamkos saw the ice very little in the first period, and I don't understand what the logic is there. Joining us now on the line is a man that we always have time for. Thank you, Captain Transition. He is Drew Remenda of CSN Bay Area. He joins us now on the Merrick vs. Wachinski podcast to talk about why the San Jose Sharks will dispatch the Los Angeles Kings in the first round of these playoffs. Hello, Drew. How are you?
How are you, gang? How's everything? Well, and the more you do this, Craig, the more you do the radio, you have that ability to transition so seamlessly. It's meant to be for you.
No, he is the 1980s Edmonton Oilers. No one transitions better. Coffee gets the puck up to guts, and boom, he's off to the races. Hey, now, Drew, here's the big news on our podcast, and it does affect your team. You might want to spread this up and down the aisles of Air Shark when you're next to the board. Greg is involved in a bet, a wager, a pie-in-the-face wager with the Los Angeles Kings mascot. He's taking Sharks. Obviously, Bailey is taking Kings. The loser gets a pie in the face. I don't know how much influence you have over games. I don't know how much influence you have over teams. But as funny as I'd like to, you know, see my little podcast buddy take a pie in the face, I really want Greg to win this thing.
Yes.
Yes.
This is,
if,
you know what?
If anybody deserves a pie in the face, it's Bailey.
Precisely. So if Todd McClellan's looking for a little bit of extra spice in a pregame speech, or if Larry wants to yell at the team and bring something up that he's, you know, looking for a new metaphor, a new reason to win, don't be shy about letting the coaching staff know that there's a new wrinkle in this series.
Well, as you know, Larry Robinson has got 9 Stanley Cup rings, and of course Todd McClellan, Jay Woodcroft, who have won Stanley Cups as well with the Detroit Red Wings, and Jim Johnson, over 800 games played in the National Hockey League. Wayne Thomas, another Stanley Cup winner with the Montreal Canadiens. They often come to the guy who's lost 100 games quicker than anybody in the history of the National Hockey League and coaching staff in the first 2 years of the San Jose Sharks. They often come to me for advice and say, you know, what do you think we should say to the guy? So I'll be first on my list, guys.
You're the best, Drew. You are the best.
They don't seek my counsel very often.
Well, you know, if you're on air,
although
Shark,
they do when they say, "Does this tie match the suit?" And then, of course, then they come to me.
Well, hang on. Speaking of ties, by the way, we're going to get to the Sharks here in a second. But nobody rocks the battles on NHL ties better than you. Have you lost an NHL ties battle yet?
Yeah, I lost it once to my partner, and I thought it was a bogus call, but I did lose once to him. He does try to bring it, but really, when you're Wayne Gretzky of ties, you have to make sure that you it puts extra pressure on you. But that's what I live for. That's why I'm there. Yeah.
Raise the game.
That's good.
Raise the
game. You raise your level
of compete. My partner, the great Randy Hunt, is sitting just across from me over here. He just turned to look at me and said, "Hey, even Wayne wasn't first star every game."
Hey, Drew, the series is amazing. Yeah. As I said, it was it's going to be televised crack. These teams hate each other. You have a feeling it's going to go 7 games, no matter what these guys do. What do you think is the one advantage or two advantages the Sharks may have in this series against the Kings, or is it even down the line between these two teams?
Well, speaking of the great Randy Hunt, he asked pretty much the same question to Todd McClellan just a few minutes ago, and Todd said the difference this year between this year and last year is the depth of the Sharks. Rafi Torres was out, of course, played the one game and hit Jared Stolen. He was out. He's going to be back in tonight. Tomas Hertl's back and presumably healthy and played 2 games at the end of the year. That brings you more depth. You have Tommy Wingles in the lineup. You've got Mike Brown in the lineup. You've got James Shepard playing a role and going to be more of an involved player as far as just the way he's played as the third line center, and that's really solidified things. You got Pavelski playing a better game than he's ever played in his career, which is saying something, considering how good he has been, 41 goals. And the Sharks are 100% healthy. I mean, they are. They've got more depth. They've got, you know, you've got Tyler Kennedy, of course, in that situation as well. So there's a lot more guys that they're able to use. There are a lot more, for Todd, ingredients into the mix that he can bring in and out of the lineup as the series warrants it. So I think there's a little bit more depth for the Sharks. Talking to Joe Thornton this morning, he said there's a confidence. They lost in 7 games, but they felt they played well last year. The series, over the last 17 games, 16 of the 17 games have been decided by the home ice team. And that's something that, you know, having home ice advantage this time around versus last season, they didn't have it. There's just a different vibe about this team this year right now than there was last year going into the series. So there's a lot in the Sharks that they're taking confidence in, and they're looking at, say, these are the positives that we have. But at the same time, LA's thinking the same thing. I mean, these games have been so close. LA, I think the one thing about LA is they played better on Sharks ice than the Sharks have played on Kings ice this year. And that's one of the concerns of the coaching staff. You know, can you bring your game from home? Can you travel down to Southern California? But overall, when you look at the way the teams play, they're so similar, guys. You know, the face-offs are, you know, it's 2 and 3. It's forecheck versus forecheck, or you know, breakout versus breakout, whichever way you want to play it. It's the overused word, but we're going to use it again and again, is heavy. It's going to be a heavy series. Both teams play heavy. Both teams want the puck, and both teams look at it as, you know, if you can get to their goalie, you're going to have to work in order to get there. You're going to have to earn the right to get a chance on the goaltender.
Hey, Drew, I want to talk about Joe Pavelski, and I want to do it in a roundabout way. Remember 2008? Remember that season?
I do.
Remember Brad Boies, then of the St. Louis Blues, scored 43 goals, I want to say?
Yeah.
Was that Joe Pavelski this year? Because when he scored 43 in 2008, nobody even whispered about it, and I kind of feel the same way about Joe Pavelski.
Yeah, with the... I would say to add to that that I think Joe will be able to sustain more of a scoring pace than Brad Boies. You know what I mean?
Well, he's not. Brad Boies was a product of the line he was playing on. I mean, that was the thing with him.
Here's the thing about Joe Pavelski, and this is something I didn't know. I was interviewing him for the TV show we do down here, and I asked him about just kind of, you know, recap his career for me, and he said, you know, when I first came in the league, I had the stint with the Sharks, and after the first year, Ron Wilson was the head coach, took me aside in the exit interviews, and we talked about my career, and he said, you know, you're the last guy on the list right now. These are the guys that are slated ahead of you. And Ron wasn't wrong at the time. These are the guys who are slated ahead of you. You're going to have to do some things to make yourself a better hockey player and find a way to stay in the National Hockey League and carve out a career. You've got to find a way to get better. And Joe Pavelski did that. And Jay Woodcroft coined a term, and I thought it was really neat. He said, Joe Pavelski, and I asked him earlier this year, why is Joe Pavelski so good? He says, because he has championship habits. He works on his game. And you know what? We hear about guys working on their game all the time. This guy works on his game before and after practice. He is out working on his skating, on his stick handling, always working on his shot, always working on his face-offs, always trying to become a complete player. And I thought the championship habits was a really interesting statement until Jay Woodcroft said, and what he's done is he's changed the culture of this team. He's been a culture changer because the young guys are looking at Joe Pavelski going, well, if it's working for that guy, and he's out there and he's doing it and he's getting those results, then we better get out there. So much to the point where sometimes the coaches have had to, in this very compressed schedule, go, okay, stop. You guys can't go out early. You can only stay on 10 minutes later. That's how hard Joe works on his game and is able to influence and change and lead the younger guys. So I think that's why Joe Pavelski will continue to be having the numbers that he's putting up right now. Now this year it's been, you know, extraordinary because he's able to play with Joe Thornton on that left side. But let's not forget he started the season in third line center. So Joe Pavelski's hockey IQ is off the charts. His work ethic is off the charts. And those habits have paid off for him. And that's basically all it is. Nothing in this game comes without hard work and effort and dedication. And he's got all that.
That said, Drew, if you had to hand out a Hart Trophy within the San Jose Sharks this year, would it go to Pavelski or would it go to Joe Thornton?
Oh, wow. I got a soft spot for Joe, just because he's Joe, you know. But I got to go with Pavs. As you know, what we were talking about, it's funny you say that, Greg, because we were talking about it the other day, because we kind of take Joe Thornton for granted around here. His numbers as a San Jose Shark, and this team without Joe Thornton, I shudder to think where the Sharks would be if Doug Wilson never pulled the trigger on that trade. But Joe Thornton, you talk about a culture changer. He's been the major changer in this organization. And you look at Joe, and I guess we take him for granted because he's always been great. He's always been terrific. He's always been the leader on this team. But 63 points, or 63 assists, second in the league in that regard, and I don't know where he was in scoring, but he's just amazing. But I think this year, Joe Pavelski, and on the goals and the timing of the goals, how he scored them, I would lean probably to Joe Pavelski, but boy, it would be 1 and 1A as far as my vote might be split there. I might be like that hang. It might be a hanging Chad vote right there. Might be.
Get you to Florida ASAP. How did Hurdle look in the last couple of games, Drew?
Good. Tom Collins said it better than he thought he was going to. He had a post in the first game. He had a couple of great chances in the second game against Phoenix. He admitted he was a little tired after both games. He didn't feel like he had his legs. You guys know as well as I do. Nothing gets you in that playoff mode, the hockey playing mode more than playing hockey. You can ride all the bikes you want. You can Yep. You can run, you can do all the stairs, but you've got to get out on the ice and skate. And he said he was a little bit fatigued after games, but this kid's got a confidence level that just kind of doesn't go away. It's like that old saying, you know, if you can stay calm while everybody else around you is in a panic, then you obviously don't know the severity of the situation. He's kind of like that. He's 19 years old. He's got a big smile on his face, and he's, as he says, living dream. And he has got an ability in the offensive zone that the puck just seems to follow him. He generates chances when you don't think there's any space available. So I thought he looked really good. He looked better than I thought he was going to look. Now, can you sustain it? There's the key. I mean, there's a risk when now Raffy coming back in the lineup and Tomas Hertl coming back in the lineup, there's certainly a risk. But they have been out and rehabbed, and now can you take that pace that you're playing at, and Raffy's got to pick up at that pace, and then go with it for seven games, maybe, well, and hopefully more, you know, the four series. Can you do that? That's going to be the big test.
Interesting. Now, I know you've probably felt this way about previous Sharks teams, and been heartbroken at the end of the season. But does it feel like there's anything different about this group than in previous seasons?
I think I say it every year. I really do. I mean, there's a couple times I was lying to anybody on an interview when I was talking about a Shark team going to the playoffs, like the team that lost to St. Louis. You knew they didn't have it. But what I see with this team is they've always had the ability, and it's because of Joe Thornton, to be able to stay on an even keel, almost, you know, to the point of frustration for a guy like me, even as a broadcaster, that even after a loss, it was, oh, well, you know, we'll get him next time type of thing, and kind of drives me nuts that they're so loose, because I'm obviously not a guy who's, you know, a loose guy. They are a bunch of guys that are able just to kind of stay in the moment and then go with it and then let it go. And I'm talking to Larry Robinson today, is that he said, in the playoffs, that's a great trait. Because when the game's over, the game's over. That's it. And, you know, a guy who's got 9 Stanley Cup rings, as Todd McClellan said today, will probably follow his advice quite a bit. So they've got that ability, and I think in this situation, it's great. They're a confident group, and I think this year, as compared to some last years, they look around the room, and they've got that belief in each other. Now, that will get tested, of course, in the playoffs. But when you talk to the guys about each other, and you know, I've been here for 20 years, so they will share things with me that, you know, they may normally not share with somebody publicly. But there's nary a bad word said about anybody, even guys that you would think, you know, I'd probably say something negative about him if I was on his team. They're really good. They stick with each other. They back each other up. And I've seen Joe Thornton this year try to lift more guys up than beat them down. You know, as a captain, sometimes you got to get after them. He's more about lifting guys up now. He's more about, nah, bud, you're great, you're fine. Like, he talks up Brent Burns all the time. He talks up, like, the young guy, like Matty Nieto and Tomas Hertl all the time. So I think Joe's got a little bit more of an upbeat, pat you on the back, lift you up, we're going to go this together kind of way than pointing the finger, like, you know, at times at some other captains, and sometimes even Joe used to do. So there's a difference in the attitude. There's a difference in the feeling, but still, it's you know, you got to take it out to the ice, right? I asked Scott Hannon today. I said, you know, what's the difference about playing in the playoffs? And he said, lots of different things about it. I thought his best thing was there's a clarity of focus because you're not worried about anything else but who you're going up against and what you have to do to make your team better. And we kept talking about it. He said, Drew, listen, the bottom line is, it's who's going to play better. You can talk about all the things you want going into a playoff series, but the bottom line is, who is collectively going to play better? That's it.
If I may, Drew, borrow a line from the movie Jaws, which happens to be my favorite movie of all time. Well, there is that, and there's the USS Indianapolis speech, which is fantastic as well.
Right.
We delivered the bomb. Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, Raffy Torres returns to the Sharks lineup this evening. How much of a difference maker can he be in this series against the Kings?
He can be a huge difference maker. He can be the leader of a strong forecheck game. He's got energy. He's physical. He's great at retrieving pucks. He is also a guy that Drew Doughty, Willie Mitchell, Slava Voynov, Alec Martinez, all those defensemen will be looking for before they get the puck. They will be maybe making a play quicker on the puck than they want to because 13 is out on the ice. He can make a huge difference. And that's one of the things that you can look at last year as being a difference that, you know, Raffy hit Jared Stoll and then he was out for the series and Jared was out for a few games too. So it was kind of a trade-off. But Raffy is a huge difference maker in what the other team thinks and what your team thinks and feels. Last year when Raffy went out, there was obviously a relief and a confidence and an ease going into games as compared to playing this time around with him because he's going to be in the lineup. And those defensemen and those other forwards are going to be looking for him. There's the unpredictability of Raffy Torres that can be predictable from the coaches. This is what Raffy's going to go do. But from the players out there, you're looking and you're moving before you really want to because 13's going to come down and deliver a big hit. He's a physical guy, and when he hits, you feel it. And by the way, Rick Scheider, that line, improv'd, ad-libbed. Did you know that?
Oh, was it?
We're going to need a bigger boat. Was him ad-libbing that line.
I'm sure
there's
his
a great piece in...
His first version was, we're going to need a shark that works.
Yeah, the other line was, we can't really show this dumb thing on screen. God, no one's going to believe this is a real shark.
Nobody's going to like this. It's the dumbest movie I've ever done.
Yeah, and turned out to be one of, if not the best.
Hey, Drew, last one for me, sir.
Yeah.
Prediction time. What do you think about the series? We go in seven?
Yeah, it's a seven-game series. I don't know a lot of things, but I believe that to be true. This is the teams that have been very close. These are teams that know what each other does. They play very similarly. I just can't see this not going seven. I don't know if teams will get two wins in a row on this one. And hopefully it'll go the same as it did last season, that the home team wins all the games.
You know, Drew, let me get for my last one here with you. I'll let you get back to your afternoon. We had a conversation 2 days ago on the podcast about Alexander Ovechkin, and I was making the point that, you know what, why not just take the C off the guy and just let him be a hockey player, get rid of all the outside BS that comes along with being the captain of a hockey team. And I got torn apart by Ovechkin lovers on Twitter. How did Patrick Marleau react when they took the C off of him?
Two things. Number one, you're too old to be ruled by the thoughts of dumb people on Twitter. That's number one. Number two, Patrick Marleau is a professional. He's a pro. And Patrick Marleau didn't like it. Here was the interesting conversation. We'll backtrack a little bit there. Patrick Marleau, when Todd McClellan came in, there was a lot of talk about Patrick Marleau and this, that, and the other thing. You know, was he the right guy to be captain? Because Patrick... his demeanor belies the fact that he's got a passion and a fire to play the game. And you can't be as good as a hockey player as he's been and play all those games and have 7 30 goal seasons and have all those points in the playoffs without having that fire. But he just has that calm demeanor outside of it. He's very, he's low twitch fiber outside of it. So Todd McClellan came in and said, is there any reason you should not be captain? When he had his first interview with Patrick. Patrick said, no, there's not. And they had to talk about it. This is what I expect from you. And Patrick said, okay, and tried to bring it. Now, there was, you know, the net, I think that was the, you know, Jeremy Roenick was here. There's some turmoil. You know, you've heard the reports from Jeremy Roenick in his book. Some of it is actually true. Some of it embellished by the author. But there was certainly a change needed to happen at the top. And so when Rob Blake got the captaincy, nobody was happier than Patrick Marleau. And Patrick Marleau, I think his game excelled, going to your point, that if you took that C off him, that responsibility, and there does have responsibility coming to it, it allowed Patrick to be the player he wanted to be. And I think that sometimes he wasn't crippled by the captaincy, but sometimes he was hampered by it. Joe is more of a natural, outgoing, personable, big personality in the room. Patrick doesn't mind being the other personality in the room. Or one of the other personalities in the room. And you can't say that it's affected his game. In fact, if anything, the C off of Patrick Marleau helped his game. and it allowed other guys to take that and allowed Patrick just to go do what Patrick does. I think I would add to it that Alexander Ovechkin may be the worst choice for a captain because he's minus 38, and Adam Oates did not hold Alex Ovechkin to the same accountability standards that he would have held some other players. And your captain has to be the guy that you hold to accountability standards as high as anybody, even though you let the good players, as Mike Babcock says, let the good players do what the good players do. Henrik Zetterberg is still supposed to do what he's got to do in order to help win hockey games. Alex right. Ovechkin at minus 422, whatever he was this year, did not do that. And that's on the coach. That's not on the captain. It's on him, too. I mean, it's just... You can't be that good of a hockey player and ignore defense. You just can't, because you're not going to be successful at that. And that's a coaching mistake, that's a management mistake, and that's an individual mistake.
Good stuff, man.
And if I was on Twitter, which I'm not, I would get roasted. I understand that. But again, too old to be affected by the thoughts of dumb people.
Not affected by dumb people, especially not his partner. This is very true.
Keep rocking NHL ties, Drew. Keep rocking the NHL ties.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Drew. Catch up. Say hi to Randy for us.
I will.
Drew Remenda.
Yeah.
Great question from Section 328. And the question is, we've discussed that maybe Eric Staal could benefit from not being the captain. Your thoughts? Well, that becomes an interesting question, because then the question is always, if not him, then who? That was always the question with Ovechkin. You know, people who were like, oh, take the C off of Ovechkin. There was always the thought that the guy you'd give it to is Brooks Like, who says a lot of the right things, but here and there, maybe there is some criticism of his overall leadership. But as a team spokesperson, he's great, better than Ovechkin. If you take the C off of Eric Staal, who do you give it to? Because when he was named team captain, he replaced Brind'Amour, who then was named the alternate, because it was time to give Eric Staal the C, right? So then who would you give the C to on the Carolina Hurricanes if not Eric Staal?
Alexander Semin. why are you laughing?
But that's really the key, right, though? Like there's got to be a logical reason to take the C off the guy.
Yeah, you know, if he was younger, if he was younger in his years, I would say that Manny Malhotra would be a good captain for the Carolina Hurricanes. Even if he wasn't, you know, pending UFA, I'd say Manny Malhotra would make a lot of sense. The problem, and listen, if he was more of a prominent player, like if he was like a 1-2 defenseman, I'd make Jay Harrison captain of that team in a flash. But he's just not there. Like, his level of play isn't there. When I look at the roster, I don't see a captain that jumps out at me if it's not going to be Eric Staal, right? Malhotra would make some sense, but no guarantees there. You know, Jay Harrison isn't at that, you know, elite level, so he could be a captain. So I don't see anyone on the horizon that's going to be that guy. Like, I don't see Ryan Murphy being that guy somewhere down the road. I don't see a captain right now, to be honest with you, Wish, on the Carolina Hurricanes, other than Eric Staal.
I'm looking at the captaincies for the NHL, and a couple of things stick out for me as far as captain material. Because there's always debates about captain material, right?
Yeah.
Jason Spezza, captain?
Well, it's only one season. You can make the argument that no, and you can also make the argument based on what his owner said 2 days ago that he's going to be traded this offseason.
Mm-hmm. How do you like Andrew Ferentz as the captain of the Oilers over any of the kids?
He got it by default because those kids aren't ready yet. They're too immature.
It's a tough call. Like, you know, there was always talk that Taves was too immature, but that was the smartest thing the Blackhawks ever did, was make him captain.
I don't know if they were talking that he was immature. Talks that he was too young for it. Because even going back to North Dakota, I mean, he was, like, mature beyond his years. The only question was, and the same thing of Gabriel Landeskog, is he mature and sophisticated enough and understand the NHL enough to be able to really pull this off? Because we've seen it. We've seen it flop. Remember, I mean, how old was Brian McCabe when the Islanders made him captain? What a disaster that was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has happened the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the issue with Taves wasn't so much that he wasn't mature, just that he was just too damn young. But I mean, hang on, one thing, Curious, I wanted to get to this on the podcast yesterday. We didn't get a chance. The Jason Spezza situation is a really interesting one to follow right now because it seems as if, you know, we saw Eugene Melnyk 2 days ago give the vote of confidence to Paul McLean. So he's
coming back.
Yeah, you and I had that conversation about, you know, he tried to play a Detroit Red Wing style of defense, you know, surrender the line, let the, you know, the back checker be responsible for the guy with the puck, all that kind of stuff. Like Detroit, he fell back on his Detroit Red Wings coaching roots, folks, is what Paul McLean did this year in Ottawa, and he finally admitted it after getting, you know, berated about it all season long. If it's not Spezza, okay, as your number one center, and some say he's not a legitimate number one center. Jury's out on that one. I happen to think that he is. He's just a number one center that creates a lot of turnovers. Can Kyle Turris be that guy?
Wow.
And the reason that I ask that is, you know, there was a situation in Florida a number of years ago where Olli Jokinen was the number one guy. And for a variety of different reasons, they wanted to get rid of Olli Jokinen. He can't be our number one guy. Some reasons on the ice, some reasons off of it. And they let him go. Everyone figured that Steven Weiss was ready to be that number one centerman in Florida. If you're the Ottawa Senators, do you have a concern that as much as you loved what Kyle Turris did this year on the line with Clark MacArthur and Bobby Ryan, that if you let go of Spezza to bring in, you know, what they really need, which is another defenseman, that you get Kyle Turris as your number one center, but instead of getting a legit heavyweight number one center, you get another version of Steven Weiss?
So essentially what you're saying is that some guys just don't have it to be the guy.
Is he a big enough horse? Yeah, every time I look at Kyle Turris, highly skilled as a number two center, that's true, and he can excel in that position. But when you look at Kyle Turris, do you see a number one center there, or do you still see a guy that looks a little bit undernourished?
Undernourished, but I think he can grow into the role.
Okay, but growing into the role and forcing the role upon him are two different things. I'm just saying.
Is number one center overrated anyway? Like, is it an overrated thing? You don't think it is?
No, I don't think so. I still think you need
a horse. Who's the number one center on the Bruins?
David Krejci.
You sure?
He plays in the top line.
Yeah.
I would say he's a number one centerman, but the best centerman is the number two guy, which is Patrice Bergeron.
Okay, yeah. To me, just give me two good centers. I don't need number one, number two. I don't give a shit. Give me two good centers.
No, it depends which assignments you drop, because Patrice Bergeron is going to draw the other team's top line.
Give me Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. Just give me them. I'll win.
Oh, yeah. give me Yzerman and Fedorov. Okay, yeah, fine, I'll win. Give me Gretzky and Messier. Yeah, okay, fine, I'll win. Really,
yeah,
right?
It's going to be really fascinating to see what they do with Spezza, because essentially the thing about Spezza is that he's got one more year left at $7 million against the cap, although his salary next year is only $4 million according to CapGeek, but he's got a no trade, and then he goes UFA. And so what do you give up for that? What do you give up for potentially one year of a guy?
I know. It's a hell of a story to follow this offseason, because it seems as if
a lot of... If you're the Islanders, you give up a first-round pick. I mean, obviously, the Islanders.
One that maybe might turn into Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel. Yeah. I know. It is a fascinating one to follow this offseason, because it seems as if Eugene Melnyk, in his mind, has made up his mind that a lot of this was because of Jason Spezza. Now you can turn around and say, hold on a second here. You know, what was Jason Spezza given this year to play with? He was given a very banged up Milan Mikhailiuk, and that was pretty much the only consistency he had on his line. He was on the left side. And the right side was a complete revolving door of players. Like, there was one game, oh man, I remember it so well. There was one game we were doing, it was a Wednesday or a Thursday, and we got the starting lineup, and it was Jason Spezza on a line with a then recently recalled Mika Zibanejad, who you can recall which lost his roster spot to Stefan DaCosta coming out of training camp, and on the other side was Colin Greening. So you're Jason Spezza, and you're like, I'm supposed to be the number one centerman here. I'm making $7 million a year. I've got the C on my sweater, and I've got a third-line winger and a guy that didn't make the team out of training camp playing with me. What the F is going on here? Right?
Exactly.
It was so bizarre with Spezza this year. So bizarre.
What the F is going on? Then he hears from the general manager's office here, budget constraints. So
and they'll have and listen, they'll have them again next year. Like, Ottawa has pretty much, I don't know if they've actually come out and said it, but it's kind of well known within the industry that they're staying in that, you know, sweet spot for Eugene, which is about $58 million. They are not going to the cap. even with the new TV money from TSN for the regional package. They're not going to the cap.
No. Finishing up on the Habs and Lightning last night, by the way. Oh, and also, it made me think about this, looking at this captain's list. Stamkos played like a captain last night. I mean, he played every time he was on the puck, he was on the puck. Two goals last night, that sniper shot that beat Carey Price.
Yep.
The best player on the ice for the Lightning last night.
Okay.
That's the way it should be. And it was a real fun game to watch Stamkos play.
So, you know that, one of my pet hobbies when I watch hockey at Sportsnet is to sit there with John Shannon and Ken Reed, and come up with new analytics. New hockey analytics. PIDs is a big one, pucks in deep. What's his 5-on-5 PID? The other one is, POGs, puck off glass. What's his, POG factor 5-on-5? The other one we came up with last night watching Steven Stamkos was, and this is a toughness analytic here, Greg Wyshynski, a toughness predictor. Fists. 5-on-5 fists. You know what fists is?
What's fists?
First in scrum. And that was Steven Stamkos yesterday. How many times, Wish, was he the primary fists in the game last night after the whistle and there was a scrum? He was primary fists about 3 or 4 different times. And that's a guy that's snapping in 2 goals as well last night. So for our new fancy analytic that will drop here on MVSW, first in fists, Steven Stamkos last night.
That's great. That's fun.
Thanks, man.
And I also love that, as I said on Twitter last night, him using the puck to draw a chalk outline of PK Subban on that one play.
He did,
Isn't that amazing?
And those
amazing
former
piece of puck handling that was.
And those guys were former teammates. I'm going to sound like Don Cherry here, but I remember watching with the North River Canadiens for a season. That was one remarkable team. But yeah, it's true. Honestly, like Steven Stamkos, like didn't we say this yesterday on the show? Like this is the moment, this is the series of Steven Stamkos can make this his team. Marty St. Louis is gone. Vinny LeCavalier is gone. Brad Richards is gone. Those ties to the 2004 Stanley Cup champion team are gone. This is his chance to make this his team. And even though they didn't win last night, Wish, I think he went a long way by saying last night with his play, this is Steven Stamkos' team.
Chaos of 99 makes a Fists of the North Star reference. Well done, sir. Very well done. That, of course, is an anime, Merrick. Is an animated feature-length film usually made in Japan. Anyways.
Yeah.
So the other thing I wanted to mention about the game last night, if you're one of these people that is obsessed with criticizing Carey Price at every turn and wanted to use last night's shots-to-goals ratio as a reason to criticize him, shut up.
Yeah, I know. He was great.
The Stamkos shot was perfect, and the other 3 goals were various degrees of defensive breakdowns. I know we put it on the goalie to be the last line of defense, but when Brandon Prust decides to take the puck and put it in a Tiffany's box and put a bow around it and give it to the Lightning like it's their anniversary, then what is he supposed to do? What is he supposed to do when this thing happens to him?
I don't get the beating up of Carey Price in Montreal. Because there are so many teams that would die to have that problem. Like, there's 2 cameramen that work with us at Sportsnet on a semi-consistent basis, 2 humongous Montreal Canadiens fans. And there's sort of, you know, I look at them as sort of, whenever I talk to them, I sort of stick the thermometer in the bird and sort of get the temperature of where it's at. Like, this is where Habs fans are at with their team, specifically their netminder. And I can't believe the stuff that comes out of their mouth about Carey Price. If you don't like Carey Price that much, or if you think he's that much of a, you know, lukewarm goaltender, why don't you have the balls to trade him for a Stanley Cup winner? Why don't you trade him for Corey Crawford? I dare you. If you don't like him that much, trade him to Chicago and get the Stanley Cup winner, Corey Crawford. Good luck.
He is Canadian. Anyway, so the other game last night, I left it for last because it broke my heart. The Jackets had that game. The Jackets played well enough to win that game. They played a good road game. And the one thing that can't happen in this series happened last night, where Bobrovsky was outplayed by Marc-Andre Fleury in a playoff game. They cannot allow that to happen. He cannot allow that to happen. But it was on Bobrovsky that I think that they lost that game. There was a lot of good signs for Columbus. They hung offensively. Dubinsky Crosby looks like it's going to be a Sean Avery level of agitation in that series with Crosby having to deal with him. There's a lot of things that trended the right way for the Blue Jackets in that game last night. The one thing they need to happen didn't happen, which is for Bobrovsky to play well enough for them to win a road game like that where they score 3 goals, and it didn't happen. And now they're behind. They need a split to have any chance in the series, and now they're behind the 8 ball.
Yeah, you know, watching that game last night, this is going to sound cruel and mean, it probably is, but there are just some games where you see this. You know what there are a lot of yesterday, Wish, in that game by both the Columbus Blue Jackets and Pittsburgh Penguins? Sutter, which we like to refer to as Sutter family shots. You know what Sutter family shots are? Ones that go right in the crest. Right in the goalie's crest every single time. Sutter family shots. And ironically enough, it was a Sutter family member with a Sutter family shot that went through Bobrovsky last night. Just keep, like, yeah. Goaltenders now, that, I mean, they're so big. And I'm sure Ian Clark is impressed. He's a goaltending coach for Columbus, has impressed us upon Sergei Bobrovsky countless times. You're big. You don't need to spread out your arms. Keep your elbows in tight, because that Sutter goal was a Sutter shot right at the crest, but it stuck in under the arm.
All right, real quick tonight, because we have to get the QED. I got to get out at 3, so we're up against it. Philly and the Rangers, no Mason, Emery plays. I wrote this morning on Claude Giroux, one of only 5 active players, Jeff Merrick, to be over a point per game in his playoff career, which is pretty amazing. Only 35 Absolutely. Players in NHL history are over a point per game. I think he's the key to the series. The McDonough-Girardi versus Giroux line matchup, to me, is the key to the series.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, this is one that I hope gets nasty early as well, because it could really Absolutely. Be a lot of fun. Like, you don't want this one to build. Like, you want this to start opening faceoff. Something dumb happens right away.
Mm-hmm. Previewed the Blackhawks and Blues earlier today on Puck Daddy. The news out of the Blues camp is that they will get Tarasenko back for Game 1, which is great, mm-hmm. but they will miss Berglund and they will miss Oshie tonight, which sucks. Chicago, by the way, if you ever were wondering about their depth at forward, they have a guy named Patrick Kane you may have heard of. He won the Conn Smythe last year. Very talented
little guy.
Player. Yeah, he's on their third line. He's on their third line with Bickwell
and
Shaw.
You know why? Because he just doesn't have good hands. That's why. That's one thing about Pat Kane. Ask all the greats, Wish. The hands go first.
So good luck to the Blues in that series. And then Minnesota and Colorado. In what should be a real fun match. I mean, I think it's going to be a quick series. I pick Colorado in 5. I think you're going to see the sort of start that we saw in Anaheim last night for Colorado night. I think they're going to be jumping and chomping at the bit to get out there and win that game one.
They may be the fastest team in the playoffs. And yeah. I'm curious to see how Nathan McKinnon does in his first NHL playoff game.
Yep. And then Also, condolences to Mike Chambers of the Denver Post, who got all boo-booed face because Ilya Bryzgalov wouldn't talk to him. And
what
actually
happened?
Wrote us. Bryzgalov gave him a bunch of non-answers when he asked about the Semyon Varlamov versus Bobrovsky versus Bryzgalov matchup. And then he actually wrote a post on the Denver Post website talking about how insulted he was that Bryzgalov brushed him off. And all I could think of is, if any blogger wrote that post, the levels of down-the-nose looking ridicule from PHWA members,
well, just goes to show you that when you enter a real locker room, these things happen, rah, rah, rah.
And yet this guy wastes his time to bitch about a space cadet not giving him the answers he wanted. It was, I don't know what the hell he was thinking writing that thing, but he took it on the chin last night from readers, and rightfully so. Real quick question of the day was, give us your unsung heroes of the postseason, your favorite unsung heroes in NHL history. Zach writes in, I will never forget Andrew Brunette scoring in Game 7 of the 03 playoffs in Denver. Greatest moment in Minnesota Wild history. To be honest, I wouldn't care if they retire his number. He was the savior for hockey in the upper Midwest.
And why is that symbolic for tonight?
Because it came against Patrick Waugh.
The last goal Patrick Waugh ever let in.
Ah, that's right. Will Munson, being a diehard Ducks fan, I believe Daniel Winnick to be a playoff unsung hero. He is a beast in the corners, rarely makes mistakes on defense, and is their best PK player on the team. To that end, he also made the definitive defensive play last night with Lettinen pulled. Marty Rapp, Michael Foley.
Oh, by the way, I think Ryan Getzlaff made the ultimate defensive play yesterday, with all due respect.
Taking a shot to the face, yeah.
Yeah.
Marty Rapp writes in, my unsung hero from the Blackhawks Cup run last year was Michael Frolik. His steady play on the PK throughout the season, especially in the playoffs, is sadly missed this year. No kidding. Their PK dropped down to the 20s. Paul Vogel finally writes in about the captain situation. Guys, does your captain have to be a great player Dirk Graham was the Hawks captain for years and was a third line player for the Sens. How about Clark MacArthur?
Yeah, that's interesting, too, because right now it seems as if the default, I mean, it's so political right now with the C, it almost seems the default is, and we saw this specifically with Roberto Luongo, they gave him the C just to make him sign a new contract. It seems as if right now, there's another one, to try to get the guy to stay or to curry favor with the player, you put the C on him. See, I don't know that in a lot of situations the right guy has the C on his sweater anymore, or jersey if you're American. A lot of it just has to do, it is wrapped up, sorry, which, I don't know, Rock Carrier there, has to do with what the right political choice is rather than what the capital R right choice is. That's and you see true. That in Toronto. You see it in Toronto. In a lot, that was, in a lot of ways, that was the Leafs, coaching and management staff that wanted to justify the Phaneuf trade.
A lot of people poo-poo the captaincy, and they just think it's a symbolic thing. They think it's a superfluous thing. And granted, it's not as if the captain is doing all of the heavy lifting in, when it comes to behind-the-scenes stuff. But I think symbolically it's a very, very important important thing. So, you know, I don't take it lightly when they give the C to somebody or they take the C from somebody. It could signal a lot of things. Like, for example, when Nash got the C in Columbus, it signaled the changeover from we are going to go out and hire as many mercenaries as possible, veteran mercenaries as possible to populate our lineup, to we are going to have this guy be the torchbearer for a generation of homegrown players. And I thought that was a really important thing.
Let me give you a quick example of what a good captain can do. There was a situation, I was told this actually not that long ago, with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They were on the road, and everyone was on the bus except for Darcy Tucker. Pat Quinn was the head coach. Matt Sundin was the captain. And Tucker was late getting back to the bus after the game. And so Quinn was like, that's it. Screw it. Close the door. We're going. And Matt Sundin stood up and said, Pat, no. Give him the time. It's only a couple minutes. Give him the time to get on the bus. We will deal with it. And I don't know what the punishment was, but there was punishment from the team towards Darcy Tucker for holding up everybody. That was Matt Sundin coming in saying, hold on, no. Guys, I'm talking to the coach here. This bus is staying here until Darcy Tucker comes on. But then when he gets on this bus, we decide what his punishment is for making us all wait. There's only certain types of guys that can do that. And Sundin was one of those guys.
Interesting. Very good. All right. Listen, no show tomorrow. Yeah, Good Friday, all that. Traveling to Jersey to be with some family and such. And so then we'll be back on Monday. Enjoy the hockey over the weekend. I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I am Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet. And, Greg, I am reminding you to remind me to do something on Monday.
Yes.
You do it?
We're up against it. Otherwise, you'd
okay.
Be, yeah, we have a story to tell.
And towels so and water. Towels and water. Remind me on Monday. Towels and water. With that, we will sign off. Thanks for joining this week on MVSW. We are back on Monday. Enjoy the puck tonight, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're back kicking off the week on Monday, 2 o'clock Eastern, right here, your favorite iTunes store. Thanks for joining us, folks.
Indeed, indeed. And hey, if you're on iTunes, leave us some love in the comments. And
or a pie in the face, whatever you want.
Or a pie in the face. Yes, Bailey, if you're out there listening. If you can get this podcast through your big plushy ears.
Big dumb ears.
Boy, did you back the wrong horse, my friend. I really hope that there's a large laundry budget in Los Angeles for you picking meringue or rhubarb or whatever pie I choose out of that big furry mane of yours, because you're going down, brother.
You see,
you
if
are
you're gonna
going
hit,
down, if, down if to Chinatown.
Gonna... If you're going to hit Bailey with it, it's got to be, honestly, like a really good, like, sticky pecan pie so it sticks all over his fur. You don't want something that he can clean easily.
Nope. I know what it's going to be.
Messy. You do,
I'm going to make a shark pie.
Nope.
I am going to make a pie out of shark. Mako
pie
shark.
Out of shark?
Yep.
Good Lord.
It's going to be a savory pie. A pie made completely out of shark.
Oh, by the way, Wish, as I conclude here, because I got to wrap up too.
Yeah.
I did forget to tell you something today.
Okay, well, tell me later because I got to take this call. All right, bye, everybody.
Eat the penguin. Eat the penguin.
Shut up. All right, bye, everybody. All right. See you Monday. Bye.
Later.